As we continue our series on the book of Acts, we see Saul today, and the text tells us that he is still spewing threats of murder and destruction. And the reason that the text says still is because a story that we actually haven't covered, since we can't cover every chapter in Acts, is the first story where we first meet Saul. And that's the story of the stoning of Stephen. So Stephen is a follower of Jesus. And at this point in the book, this new group of followers, these Christians, are being persecuted. And Stephen then is the first one who is stoned to death. And in that story, we read that the people stoning Stephen lay their cloaks at the feet of this man named Saul. And it seems now, as we come to this text today, that Saul's involvement in that time seemed to sort of inflame and encourage this religious zeal that he had. And now he has gone to the authorities and gotten papers so that he can go out and find these people following Jesus, and he can drag them in. And so this is a point where we find Saul, we meet Saul in greater fullness. He has become a religious fanatic, bent on violence to those who do not understand the world in the way that he does, willing to kill because he is certain that he is right and they are wrong. This, sadly, sounds all too familiar. Some things never change. There are people from all corners of the world who fit this profile today. And today, our story tells us about one of them, named Saul. And then we come to this conversion experience, this story of Saul on the Damascus Road. It's such an icon of the faith that you'll hear people even using it casually in non-religious settings, saying, well, I haven't had a Damascus Road experience, but... And then they go on to say about something they now come to understand better. And after this conversion, we get to know Saul, the name Paul becomes the more familiar use for that. So we sometimes hear about Paul, sometimes Saul, in these early passages. But as he goes out into the world, Paul becomes the name that he is known by, and the name that we know him by. Now, that name change can feel like a symbol of change, of this conversion that happens. And today I'm going to talk about conversion. But I want to be clear here that I'm not specifically talking about a conversion of a person from Judaism to Christianity. That distinction would have made no sense to Saul. He did not see himself as leaving one religion for another. He was a faithful Jew all his life, as were most followers at this point. This is not a story so much about a conversion from one religion to another, but more a story of a change, of a deep shift, of a paradigm shift. And it's a huge paradigm shift. If you think about it, you have this man who is ready to kill and has been involved in the killing of people who do not see Jesus the way he does. And after this Damascus Road experience, he becomes a paradigm in the Bible for a different way of thinking about Jesus. He writes more books than anyone in the New Testament. He goes out on many, many missionary journeys. It's almost an incomprehensible shift that we see here. And so I want to talk a little bit about this idea of conversion and what it means. Now, Paul is, or Saul, I'll probably use those terms interchangeably today. Paul's story of conversion is one of a series of conversion stories in the book of Acts at this point. And they don't look the same. They happen in different ways to different kinds of people. Richard shared about the story of an Ethiopian convert. We read about a centurion. We hear about all sorts of Samaritans, various people, and each encounter that brings someone closer to Christ happens in a different way. There's no cookie cutter conversion formula here. So what is the similarity? It seems to me that the similarity is that these stories are all reaching into groups and places of people that do not seem like they would fit into this new group. There is reason for the group not to welcome them. And that's certainly true in this case. And so there's something about conversion that affects not only the one converted, but the community as well. For Saul, this change of heart, as I said, is very dramatic, more dramatic than perhaps any of the others. That's why it stands out as such an icon. But and when we hear this talking about the Damascus Road experience, I think what we're talking about is something dramatic, just a whole new, different way of seeing the world. And that's the first thing that I would say, is that conversion represents a whole new way of seeing. One commentator talks about this metaphor of seeing as an important thing. Raj Nadella says it this way: Saul was certain of how he wanted to see Christ and insisted that others see him the same way. Luke tells us that Saul lost his sight for 3 days and regained it after his encounter with Ananias. An interesting detail of the story is that Saul's scales fell off, allowing him to see again. Saul does not merely see again, rather his loss of sight and regaining it has a metaphorical significance of ceasing to see members of the way as he had been accustomed to, as enemies, and learning to see them as people deserving of acceptance despite any theological and ideological difference. Luke's detail that Saul fell to the ground before eventually getting up again also has the metaphorical significance of a fall from his certainty that insisted that others see the world as he did. Saul, who had been breathing out threats against them, now enters into communion with them. He gains a new vision of things that allows him to see and relate to the theological other as people deserving of respect. But Paul's is not the only conversion, I think, that we see in this story. There is another named character, and that is the character of Ananias. And Ananias also has a vision. Paul isn't the only one. It's tempting to see this Damascus Road story as just a story about Paul, and there's good reason to. I mean, in the book of Luke, the book of Acts, Luke tells us 3 different times about this conversion of Paul, but it's not the only conversion that happens here. Ananias sees this vision, telling him to go to this man, to go to Saul. And of course, not surprisingly, at first he resists. Think about it. Ananias was part of this small, close-knit, persecuted group who had every reason to be deadly afraid of men like Saul. Their lives were literally in danger because of men like Saul. In fact, they may well have known Stephen, been part of that group. This is the man who was at least tangentially responsible for killing their loved one. And now Ananias is supposed to go to him. He's supposed to share with him. He's supposed to ultimately invite him, baptize him into the group. And then the group is supposed to accept this man who has harmed people they love. That's almost as big a shift in seeing as the shift that Saul had to take. Which brings me to my second point about conversion. Conversion is also forgiveness. Now, I want to be careful here, because forgiveness is not something that someone outside of an event can insist upon someone who has been touched by it. Not at all. Forgiveness is not something that we can determine for anyone else. In fact, I have found when I have suffered a deep injury that I'm unable to forgive. Not by myself. It's not something that I can just force myself to really do. Not internally, not really, not fully. No, I think forgiveness only comes as a gift from God. And it comes to us usually after some time. It is that moment when the burden of bitterness, the heaviness of hatred or the fetter of fear is lifted. And a new lightness can come into us. And it only comes after we are internally prepared for that. So that's the part we can do. We can be prayerful. We can prepare ourselves to want to forgive. But I think rather than being something we give, forgiveness is something we receive. Not only the forgiveness for who we are and what we've done, but the forgiveness for what others are and what they have done, that kind of grace. Which brings up me to my third point about conversion, which is that conversion is not something we do. Conversion is something God does. You'll see in this story that Saul really does nothing to deserve this conversion. Saul doesn't ask for this conversion. In fact, neither does the church, really. Conversion comes because it is the work of the Spirit in the world. And it is this Spirit that has come to these people at Pentecost that somehow enables them to see differently, to shift their paradigm from an old useless theology that is not Spirit-based, that worships itself more than it is open to God. It is the Spirit enables a new seeing. It enables forgiveness, and it enables this sort of shift, this sort of conversion, to be able to see enemies as friends, to be able to accept people for who they are, even when they are very different from us, to enable us to reach out our arms more widely and include people we never thought we could. Conversion has the power to do all of that. And conversion has the power to take even a religious fanatic bent on violence and hatred and turn them into a loving and enthusiastic companion to us in our faith, in a very different, open, and accepting faith. Now, some people have trouble with Paul today. They see him as a little exclusionary because of certain isolated verses about women or about different sexual behaviors or about slavery, and so they worry that perhaps he was really misogynistic or homophobic or just all too willing to accept the social stratifications of his day. But I disagree. I think, in fact, what Paul's conversion did for him is it made him the leading voice of inclusion. In fact, that was really his life's work, was to argue relentlessly, to open the doors wider, to include Gentiles, to include people who were different from himself, because he knew that he had been included when he shouldn't. And I think those isolated verses, if really studied, do not always say what we think they say at a glance. In fact, this new body was more open to various groups. It included slaves and women in ways, for instance, that most religious gatherings of its time did not. It may sound a little harsh to our ears today, but I do think that even those hard verses were actually an attempt to open the door wider than it had been open. This is a conversion that invites people in. And once the Holy Spirit descends on the church, never again do we read in our scriptures about the church being about forming enemies or acting in violence against others. They are nothing more than a reconciling, inviting force in the world. That's what the Spirit can do. This is the good news, my friends, that even the people who have committed the most heinous crimes, even the politicians that we cannot stomach, even us, we can all be converted because God is that powerful and the Spirit is that creative. So we should never write anyone off. Not ourselves, not our enemies. The Spirit gives us the power to love beyond what we think we can. It gives us the power to see in a new way, to forgive beyond what we can do ourselves, to accept and to change. This, my friends, is the good news of our faith.